said she heard about what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
He said she heard about what's going on. About what's going on.
Show He Said She Heard. Chi è l'ospite di oggi, Mike?
Vic Ferrari.
Oh, welcome to our show. Could you repeat the name, Mike?
Vic Ferrari.
Let's welcome our guest today.
Welcome to He Said She Heard. I'm your host, Mike Fox, and we've got a great show for you today. Now, joining me on the program here is a former NYPD detective. Now he is an author. So many books out there, folks, by this wonderful author here. Most recent one's called Confessions of a Catholic High School Graduate. But then you look at these other titles, and I'm excited because I get to see, I get to say the words dickheads and what's the other one?
Debauchery.
Dickheads and Debauchery is actually the title of a book he wrote in 2016. But a lot of his books are about the funny stories of working for the NYPD, NYPD Law and Disorder, the NYPD's Flying Circus. Oh, I got to check out that one. I just love the cover and NYPD looking through the looking glass. Vic Ferrari is here today. How are you, Vic?
I'm doing great, Mike, and thank you so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. When I was reading your bio, I found you on a podcast matching site. For those of you that also host podcasts and looking for great guests, Podmatch is a great way to find wonderful guests. And Vic, when I was looking at your background, I was just like, yeah, I got to get this guy in the show. This will definitely make for an interesting conversation. So when you started to become an author, was it while you were still on duty? Did you just have these ideas? Like, these stories here are just so fascinating. I got to get pen to paper.
No, actually, it had nothing to do with it. I retired. I moved down to Florida. I was bored out of my mind. And
okay,
at the urging of friends and family, they said, you know, you got all these great stories. You had, you know, an interesting career. You should really, you know, write some of these things down and try to get a book out. I was apprehensive about it because, you know, coming from law enforcement, most cops don't really want to write about their past. I don't know why, but I cranked out one book. And what I said was, the two things I didn't want to do was get anybody divorced or in trouble. So with my books, I changed the names, the dates, the locations, the ranks. But as soon as I put a book out, I get 20 calls from my former colleagues, like, I know exactly who you're talking about, or I remember when that happened.
You're like, that's about me. That's about my wife. So you get those types of calls?
Yeah, not about my wife, although there is a story in there about someone's wife. But yeah, I do know, but I try not to embarrass anybody.
Of course. Now, I just love the titles. I love the covers. It's just so fascinating. I can't wait to... Which one do you recommend I start with? You know, because I'm definitely going to want to buy one of these books. Which book should I start with? Which one should I dive into?
On the NYPD side, I would go with NYPD Law and Disorder. That was my last NYPD book. And that kind of, when you read that, it points to stories in the other books. So you'll say, oh, all right, I know what he's talking. I know this character from this book, and I know this character from that book.
Wow. That's such a fascinating thing, how you retired and you moved to Florida. You were bored out of your mind, and you found a great outlet. And now, besides the people that call you and they know who you're talking about, how's the response been from people that, you know, you didn't know prior to writing the books?
Oh, it's been great. You know, I'm just lucky. I mean, I'm a guy who had a really interesting career. And it's a type of career, it's a niche right now with true crime. And so when I put these books out, there is interest in it. And I'm lucky enough, people like yourself that are nice enough to put me on your forums to promote my books and talk about it. So it's weird because here I am, retired 15 years from the New York City Police Department. I'm living vicariously through me again, you know, through these books. I get to remember and talk to former colleagues and, you know, write about it.
That's wonderful. Now, what particular story, are there any spoilers you're willing to divulge to the listeners, or maybe like a sneak preview trailer or clip that, of anything, or do you just recommend just go out and buy it?
What do you want to hear? I'll tell you a quick story from NYPD Through the Looking Glass. You want long story or short story?
Give us a short story, so that way it entices us, like, well, I want to know more.
Okay,
you know, so then we're forced. Okay, we got to read it.
Yeah. So through NYPD Looking Glass, there's a story in there of guys that get themselves in trouble doing ridiculous things. There was a cop we used to work with, and he wasn't the brightest of bulbs. And if you're going to get in trouble in the NYPD, it's if you lose your gun, your shield, your ID card. If you lose any one of those three things, you're going to lose 30 vacation days, and they're going to put you on a year of disciplinary probation. So everyone's paranoid about losing those three things. So there was a guy we worked with, and he lived in a rough neighborhood. He was going out one night. He was going to go for a couple of cocktails, and he didn't want to bring his gun with him, and he was afraid if there was a burglary, you know, it would get discovered. So he used to hide his gun, and the one place he didn't think a burglar would look was his oven. He goes out cocktailing, comes home 4 hours, 9 beers later, liquored up, decides, you know what, I'm a little hungry. I'm going to make some frozen pizzas, preheats the oven to 425, goes into the living room and starts channel surfing with the gun inside the oven. Well, there's gunpowder and bullets, and yada, yada, yada. The gun starts going off inside the oven. He's got to crawl out of the apartment, his hands and knees, as his gun is shooting at him through the kitchen. Long story short, he loses 30 vacation days, gets put on a year probation, has to buy a new gun and a new stove.
So did he think somebody was firing at him, or did
no, he knew. You know,
it was a bad hiding spot, is what he
thought. Well, it was definitely a bad hiding spot, and I think it was a 5-shot 38 chief. So probably the first shot is, oh, shit. The second one is, yes. Oh, I know what's going on. Now it's time to crawl out of the apartment on my hands and knees, and hopefully I don't get hit by friendly fire.
Oh, boy. That's scary, but, you know, because he survived, there's a little bit of, like, oh, dark humor in there, right?
All my books are dark humor. I mean, yeah, you have to have a gallows humor if you're a cop.
Yes. I have in my blood, my father, who passed away about 9 years ago, yeah, he was a retired cop, and he had some stories to tell, and other stories I knew he kept in the vault. He wouldn't
Where
share
you
with
were?
Me. But he worked in Pittsburgh, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was a cop in Pittsburgh. But yeah, he was a sergeant, and his last job before he retired and moved on to other federal jobs after that, like he was working at the airport, and he would see celebrities come in all the time. Yeah, so he had some interesting stories on that end. So yeah, it's just so interesting though, like writing about it is just a great way to kind of take a look back at it and change the name. So that's great. And it's great that you have an audience from that. That's fantastic.
You know, it's so funny you brought up running into celebrities. You know, just being in Manhattan, you bump into them. You're working large
yes.
events, you run into them. I was working the U.S. Open in 2006. I was in a suit and tie walking around, making sure no one was bothering the players while they were in the locker room. And who do I see kind of just hanging out, sipping a drink, is John Lovitz. From Saturday Night Live.
From Saturday Night Live, yeah.
So I go over and I start breaking his balls because he was doing the Subway commercials at the time. So I go, eat fresh. And he goes, a little fucking wise ass, huh? I go, what are you doing here?
Right.
And he goes, my daughter is in love with this tennis player. He's not even like a big deal or anything. He goes, I'm just waiting. If he comes out, I can get his autograph. I go, you're John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live. Like, he was such a humble guy. I says, come on. So I brought him inside. I told him, go to the cafeteria, sit down. Let me see if I can find this guy. I go into the locker room of the U.S. Open. There's this tennis player. He just got out of the shower. I can't think of his name. His name was Vinny something from Florida. And I said, mm-hmm. How you doing? I says, listen, I said, you know John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live? He goes, yeah. I says, well, he wants an autograph for his daughter. He goes, get the fuck out of here. I go, no, really. So he got dressed. I paired them together, and you know, John Lovitz was taking photos with us and signing autographs. You do get to meet a lot of famous people. Some were really cool.
Yeah, that did happen. Something similar like that, maybe not with a tennis player, but because my dad was working out of the airport. Danny DeVito, back when they were filming Hoffa with Jack Nicholson, he was having to fly into Pittsburgh because they were filming the movie there, And yeah, he just was like, "Come with me, Mr. DeVito," and he had him put on his hat, and he took a picture and got, and he said, "Look, my kids are big fans of you," and brought it home. And I was like, "Wow, you met Danny DeVito tonight." So I guess because people were always flying in and out of the airport, that was how he would, you know, like you said, rub elbows with you know, famous people and get autographs for other people.
Yeah, it's just there's no rhyme or reason to it. One night I was in a bar in Manhattan with my ex-girlfriend. It was like Irish music, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting across a table from a guy, and I'm looking at him. I'm like, Jesus, he looks familiar. It was the actor F. Murray Abraham. He won the Academy Award for Amadeus, but like our generation would know him in Scarface. In Scarface, yes. He was Al Pacino's nemesis, Omar Suarez, that gets thrown out of the helicopter. Remember?
Yes, I remember that.
So I'm looking at him like, holy shit. So I walk over. I go, Mr. Abraham, I'm a huge fan. I says, can I buy you a drink? He goes, nah, kid, let me buy you a drink. And he couldn't believe, like at the time I was like 35 years old. I says, I got to tell you. I says, when I go out with my friends, we start getting liquored up. We imitate you all the time. Like abusing Pacino, and he goes, get out of here. He goes, everybody wants to talk to me about my Academy Award. He goes, you remember that bit part I had in Scarface? I said, yeah. I said, my generation, everybody like imitates you. And he was just such a nice guy. And just hanging out, had a couple of cocktails with the guy.
Wow, that's so cool. Well, I'm definitely going to check out, let's see, what was the book you recommended again? The
NYPD War and Disorder.
Law and Disorder. Okay, I'm going to start with that one. But I love the title for NYPD and the Flying Circus. So what was the inspiration for that that title?
So all my books are short stories. All my NYPD books, at least, are short stories. So there's no beginning.
Like a collection of short stories?
Yeah, okay. It's a chapter, and then boom, three or four stories in there. The NYPD's Flying Circus is a funny story in there. There was this Irish cop that the Spanish cops used to call El Diablo because he was such a big partier. And we used to say that he had the Prince of Darkness working for him because he would get into these situations and never get in trouble. And if you work with this guy, one of three things would happen. You would get divorced, convert to Christianity, or you would enter AA. Like he was just that much of a partier and there was always that much going on. So one night he's in this midtown bar over by Central Park. He's having a couple of cocktails with a couple of floozies at the bar. And one of those handsome cab operators comes walking in. The guys that take you around Central Park in the horse and carriage. So the guy's wearing a top hat and a felt, you know, like a felt vest. And El Diablo sees the guy and he goes, hey, you mind if I take Seabiscuit for a ride? The guy goes, yeah, sure, pal. And he goes into the men's room. El Diablo, this cop, turns to the two floozies. He goes, hey, he's a friend of mine. Come on. He goes outside, loads the two females in the horse and carriage, removes the blocks, takes the whip, gives the horse a crack on the ass, and the horse and carriage starts going, right? So the girls are impressed. I mean, he stole this fucking horse and carriage. So they're going around Central Park on the outskirts, and the horse quickly realizes that there's an asshole behind the wheel. It's not, you know, the guy that knows what he's doing. El Diablo's from the Bronx. He never had a horse and carriage before. The horse says, fuck this. I'm going to the barn to get some oats and starts picking up speed. Now, El Diablo can't stop this thing. He's got a runaway horse and carriage. And this thing is burning red lights.
It's going real fast.
By Central Park West. So now he can't stop this. The females are in the back screaming for their lives, like, let us off this friggin' thing. And he can't stop it. He goes by two other handsome cab operators who go, wait a minute, that's not Fred's. You know, someone stole Fred's horse and carriage. Now they're in pursuit, right? So the horse cuts through Central Park to get to the west side of Manhattan. And it was like a chariot race out of like Ben-Hur or something. One of the handsome cab operators got in front and started slowing him down. And then another one, they boxed him in like they do with the trotters at Yonkers Raceway. So they finally were able to stop this thing, right? The two floozies get out and run for their lives, never to be seen from again. And the two handsome cab operators, you know, they figure he stole their friend's horse and carriage. They start beating the shit out of him, right? So like, no. It was a prank, blah, blah, blah. I'm a cop, blah, 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 blah. The handsome cab operator shows up and he wants him arrested. And El Diablo says, listen, take me to an ATM. I'll take out $500 right now. I'll give it to you. We'll call it square. And the guy goes, you'll do that? He goes, yeah. He goes to the ATM, gives the guy $500, and the whole thing went away. And we thought it was a bullshit story, but then somebody knew cops that worked in the Central Park precinct. They go, no, that was a thing. Like, that really happened. It was a big deal. But, I mean, back then you could squash something like this. Nowadays, he would have been on the front page of the Daily News.
You know, that story you just told, I could see that as a movie scene. You know, these books, the stories in them, they do sound very movie worthy.
Yeah, well, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes, you know.
It is. You know, and especially because, you know, you're working in Manhattan, right?
Yeah, I worked in Manhattan, the Bronx, most of my career.
Borg, okay, yeah, so every day was just a new adventure every day that you reported the duty. You didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, I like to equate a 20-year career with the New York City Police Department is like having a front row seat to the circus. It's the greatest show on earth. You've got jugglers, fire eaters, there's people picking up shit after the elephants come by. It's just, there's always something going on.
There is always something going on. Yeah, because it's the city that never sleeps, so you just never knew what was going to happen. You never knew what type of circus you were walking into when you reported to work.
You know, you just see so many wild things that you take for granted. I was just on another podcast the other day, and the story just came to me. I don't know what even made me think of it. One time I had a large seizure of drugs and I had to bring it up. Our old lab was on the sixth floor of the police academy. So when you get to the sixth floor, I think it was to the left was the lab where they tested drugs. To the right was the ballistics section where they would, you know, test firearms from crimes. So while I was waiting for the elevator, I dropped off what I had to drop off. And while I was waiting for the elevator, I look around and there's a display case, a huge display case mounted on the wall. And it looked like something like someone's dad from a shop class would put together. Like, it wasn't like a professional thing, but it was like someone tried their best. And I'm looking at it, and they've got like a Thompson machine gun mounted to the wall. And then I look closer, and mounted there is Son of Sam's gun. You know, when he terrorized New York, like, Son of Sam's gun is mounted behind plexiglass, and I'm staring at it. And then I look to the right, there's the gun that killed John Lennon. I'm like, holy shit. Like, they're just like, things like you never think you would see. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of like, wow, had I not come up on the sixth floor and just, you know, waited for an elevator, you know, or when you go to old BCI, which is where the fingerprints, where you go to get your fingerprints done, criminal records, in the old days before everything was computerized, they had Son of Sam's arrest booking sheet and his fingerprint card mounted to the wall. So it was like famous. Every now and then, like, you bump into like these famous things from New York City history. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild.
Artifacts, yeah.
Yeah, an artifact, exactly.
Wow, that's just wild. So people could find all your books on Amazon. Is there any other places where they can find them?
No, for the most part, if you just go to Amazon and go to the books section and type in my name, Vic Ferrari, by my you know, book library will pop up.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, he's got a lot of books out there. I'll just let the nice people know here. Vic Ferrari, you could check out his books here, NYPD Through the Looking Glass. Now, the most recent one, Confessions of a Catholic High School Graduate. What's that book about?
So, Confessions of a Catholic High School Graduate, it's got a picture of a Catholic kid in Catholic school uniform running out of a confession booth chased by a priest. That actually happened to me. I grew up Catholic. I made all my sacraments, but we weren't holy rollers. Like, we didn't even go to Mass. And when it was time, when I was finishing up middle school, my dad one day, we're having dinner, and he says, pick a Catholic high school next year. And I'm like, why? We're not religious. We don't go to Mass. And he goes, because you're a clown. And if you go to public school, you're going to be a bigger clown. He goes, so pick a school run by the Men in Black. And I really wanted to have nothing to do with it. But actually, it turned around my life because I was a little pain in the ass kid, always getting into trouble. And that straightened me out and gave me the structure I needed for when I made the next jump to the New York City Police Department. So it's loaded with stories of growing up in the Bronx. There's a story in there about my dad worked for a wholesale meat provider. He was a butcher that was owned by the mafia. Now, I didn't know this. I'm 13 years old, and one day I used to go into work with him on Sundays and make chopped meat and sausage. So one day he sends me to the second floor, and as I'm going up these concrete steps, a man comes rolling down the concrete steps screaming at the top of his lungs, almost hits me. He's at the bottom of the stairs all broken up. His fingers are all crushed, and he's looking at me, and he's like, help me, help me. And these two big Italian guys come walking down the stairs. Let's just call them Carmine and Anthony. And they're laughing. Carmine and they go, Anthony. Oh, Vic, don't worry about him. He's just a friend of ours. He fell, right? They picked him up like a bag of garbage and threw him into the street, right? And another thing, his whole mouth was blue, but I'll get to that in a second. So I tell my dad, I go, Dad, Carmine and Anthony just fucking threw a guy down a flight of stairs. So my father goes, don't worry about that. Just keep working. I'll find out what happened. I said, all right. So, I mean, this was a large place. My dad was just a butcher there. And on the way home, I go, Dad, what happened? And he goes, that guy was a shoplifter. They caught him once before and they told him never to come back. They caught him today with a slab of ribs down his pants. They brought him up to the second floor. They beat his ass. They put his hands in a vise and they broke his hands in the vise. Remember I told you his hands were all broken up? And the guy started screaming. Right. He was thirsty. He wanted a drink of water. So they poured a can of paint down his mouth and threw him down the stairs. So that was the last time I ever worked there because my dad goes, look, you're 13 years old. You're starting to realize things. You're starting to notice things. He goes, I can't have – he goes, I have to work. I need a job. He says, you – I don't want this for you. I don't want you involved with these people. So that was the last time I ever went to work with my father again.
Wow. Wow. That's quite a story. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Vic Ferrari, and I can't wait to check out your books. I know I'm just going to just love them, and I know my listeners will as well. Thanks for coming on the show, Vic. It's been great having you.
Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We conclude this episode with an original song by our next guest on He Said, She Heard. Here's 40 Degree Heat with the 1980s.